So, and if you'd like to get yourselves comfortable, then I've got a thing of something to talk about tonight. When I first started teaching, we'd always have a subject. I'm going to talk about this tonight, I'll talk about that tonight. But I found that when I don't do that, you trust your mind. You look at all the people here, and you pick out something which is for my audience. Otherwise, I'd be talking from me rather than talking from you. And sometimes people say that, and it's quite weird. If it's a really good talk, and some people say, wow, you were talking just to me. And then someone else comes, hey, Bob, you're talking just to me. You're talking just to me. You know, sometimes we all feel that we're totally different from other people, than the person sitting next to you, or from the monks, or from the nuns. But what's really important is what we have in common. And that what we have in common, that allows us to communicate, and communicate something much deeper. I just was mentioning this at a talk a few days ago, and it was my old simile of the thousand petal lotus. And it was a brilliant simile, simply because it explains so much about life and how you can respect even those people you feel it's impossible to like or love. And you can how you respect yourself and how you use that different way of looking at life and perception to really go deeply in your meditation. It describes what meditation is and what our spiritual practice is on a simile of the thousand petal lotus. So here we go. And that was that a lotus, it's a simile of Buddhism, you know, from the early times. And it has many other different uses as well. So before I go to the thousand petal lotus simile, I also remember practicing this simile of a lotus, that a lotus doesn't collect anything which is in contact with. If the rain falls on the lotus is never wet, because the rain just drips off. It doesn't actually penetrate the petals of a lotus. And that's one of the reasons why, that if someone urinates on a lotus, after the urine has fallen on that lotus, it all falls off. And if you pick up that lotus afterwards and smell it, you can't smell any urine. All you can smell is lotus. The same if somebody pours, look, I such a long time out of this world, Chanel number 5 on that lotus. I don't know if that's the most popular perfume or what. Someone pours Chanel number 5 over that lotus, though that perfume will drip off the lotus, it will fall off, and then if afterwards you pick up the lotus, you will never smell any perfume on the lotus. It will still smell like a lotus, its own smell. And of course in that simile, just the perfume or the urine stands for praise and blame. I don't know how many of you this last week, people have blamed you. Some fairly, some unfairly. Sometimes people have praised you. Some fairly, some unfairly. But to me, I always was asked and learnt just how to regard all that praise and blame, just like urine and Chanel number 5. Over a lotus, it passes right by you. Because how can anyone really know what you're doing or why you're doing it? How can people actually praise you? They're not close enough to you. They can't read your mind to know why you do those things. What's an example of that? Oh, many years ago, when I was in Thailand as a young monk. And for those of you who've lived in Asia, especially the poorer parts of Asia or the poor parts of the poor countries of Asia, you know, you find that things like even vehicles or buses, you know, they're extremely old and they're not well maintained. And it was happening at this particular time that many buses in the northeast of Thailand were bursting into flames. And many people were killed. And I know one of my fellow monks, he was in one of those buses which, you know, burst into flames. And that, you know, he lost his bowl and I think bag in that fire, because the company actually replaced that bowl for him. It was their fault. But anyway, that many people were getting injured or killed. So, there was I sitting in the bus. And because you're a monk, they put you in the front seat. There's a reason for that. Because they feel that monks have got lots of good karma, more good karma than, you know, other people. So they put them in the front and they feel they're safe from front-end collisions. And it was true. I remember sometimes it was really crazy. I was in the front seat of one of these good buses, which meant on a highway, which meant they were going really fast. That's before I got in. But when I got in, they smiled. They said, "No, you don't have to pay." And they put me in the front seat, you know, right next to the window. And the bus driver was smiling because there was a movie on a TV on the bus. And he really wanted to see this, but he couldn't because he was driving. But now I was on the front seat, he knew he was safe. And so he's going in there watching the movie. And it was frightening. I mean, there's big trucks coming right towards us a few times. "Hey, look. Oh, yeah." I survived, of course. But they used to do that, and many people, if they're Asians, and especially from Thailand, you know that sometimes they put the monks in the front seat of the bus for safety. So I remember just, I was actually flying on Thai Airways once, economy class, and I reminded them of that story. I said, "Well, you know that in buses they put you in the..." It didn't work. It was a nice try, though. But anyway, I was in the front of this bus. So I was in the front of the bus next to the window, and there was another monk sitting next to me. And we're just happily just driving down the back streets of northeast Thailand. And then someone in the back shouted out, "Fire! Fire!" There was smoke coming out from the back. So the bus driver, he slammed on the brakes. And when it stopped, the whole bus, and everyone was just rushing to get out. And the monk next to me, you know, he was rushing to get out as well. Didn't matter who he touched, he was going first. The driver himself, you know, he climbed out the window. And there was Ajahn Brahm sitting quite peacefully, just watching everybody, just, "I can be last, it doesn't really matter." And the reason was because I hadn't read the newspapers. I didn't know what the problem was. Well, what's the big deal? And then everybody got out except for me and just one other passenger. And the passenger said, "Oh, I found it. It's only a cigarette. That's all." So it wasn't a real fire. It was just a cigarette. Made a bit of smoke in the back. And so all of these passengers got back on the bus. And as they had to pass me because I was in the front seat, and they all paid respect to me. Because they thought I must be totally enlightened and not afraid of dying in a fire like everyone else had done. Oh, that felt really good. But if they'd only known that I hadn't got a clue what was going on, it wasn't fearlessness, it was stupidity. And be careful, because there's not that much difference between fearlessness and stupidity sometimes. But anyway, so that was an example of praise which I certainly did not deserve. But out of compassion, I accepted it. And sometimes it's criticism. So I remember that simile of being like a lotus. And sometimes you do something, you have anything wrong at all. People criticize you and just blame you, and, "Oh, you did this, you did that, well, 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 well." And then I listen to them. And afterwards it just all goes off. And you don't keep anything. Now that's the most important. Now, I don't know why it is that people that somebody says something to you at work or just passing down the street or something. I've had some really interesting comments about me being dressed like this. Hey, you're dressed like a girl. Why didn't you get some trousers? Oh, why didn't you get a proper job? I've had that many times. I must admit that one of those criticisms, which I shouldn't have done, but I really thought was funny, because I was walking with another very senior monk. That was the monk Ajahn Sumedho. Just we were working in this place in Darlington or something, many, many years ago. And you know, I was a young monk, and you know, he was older than I was. And so this guy, who's in his suit, I think even had a bowler hat or something, and umbrella, going on his way to work. And he passed us, and he looked at Ajahn Sumedho, the elder of the two of us. He looked at him, and he said to this monk, "You are old enough to know better." And I put, what a put down that was. Well, I couldn't help laughing. It was funny. I thought it was funny. He didn't take it seriously. What does he know about what that monk was up to? So because of this, praise and blame, you just let it go. I don't take any of it seriously. And because I don't take any of it seriously, you can enjoy it. who was I telling this to? I'm not sure, but that in those years when I used to go to funeral services a lot, I still go to funeral services, there was one of the tragic cases here in Perth of a young kid passed away. And it was just maybe 5 or 6 years old. And the family were devastated. It was a Chinese family. Could have been Hong Kong or Taiwan or somewhere. And so they said, can you do the funeral service for us? But we can't go. He said, it's just too hard for us to go. I said, yeah, sure, I'll do the funeral service for you, give it a bit of extra for you. And they said, we really want our kid, to have something. So they hired a limo to go to the funeral parlor. And the kid's little coffin, it was only about this big, was in the front of the... They have only time I've ever been in a limo. They have one in the seat in the front, one in facing it, and the two drivers in their own little cabin in the front. So the two drivers were in suits and like real chauffeurs, two of them. And in the sort of the back of the limo, there was a coffin and me, but you couldn't see the coffin, you could only see me. So what it looked like, going down the streets of Perth, these two uniformed chauffeurs in a limo, and there must be this very important person in the back. Would you be able to resist it? When you stopped at the traffic lights, wound the window down and... They ain't got a clue who I was. Who knows? But anyway. So that was just enjoy yourself and just praise when you don't deserve it. And blame. But that's like the simile of the lotus, remembering that nothing sticks to you. You can enjoy it. You can enjoy the Chanel No. 5 or the urine. And then afterwards it disappears. And nothing is left. So in life, I don't know what's happened to you this week, but please be like that. That lotus sun, you don't keep anything. So you're totally free and peaceful. That creates a lot of stillness and happiness in your life. But anyway, the real simile of the 1,000-petal lotus is a lotus is closed up at nighttime, like a bud. And then when the sun rises, and when that sun rises, that's one of the reasons they didn't have lotuses in England. Yeah, it's really dull and miserable. So they never out to open long enough to get pollinated or whatever. Anyway, so it's closed up. But when the sun, in Asian countries, the sun rises, and the light and the warmth of the sun hits that lotus on the outside, it opens up. That's what causes the lotus to open, the warmth and light of the sun. And slowly it opens. And once one layer of petals opens, it allows the second layer of petals to receive the warmth and light of the sun. And that opens, allowing the third layer of petals to receive the warmth and light. And that opens. It opens one by one, allowing the next layer of petals to receive the warmth and light of the sun. So that can open. You go deeper and deeper and deeper inside the lotus. And as you go deeper inside that lotus, the petals are more fragrant, more beautiful. There's this pure smell of a flower as it's opening. And they're thinner, more delicate, more profound as you go deeper and deeper in. And of course that simile represents you. You are that lotus. And as you open up more and more and more, as you go deeper inside yourself, you find it becomes more and more fragrant, more and more delightful, beautiful, more profound. You get more insight into what your nature is. You don't learn about yourself from a book. You don't learn about yourself from a video on YouTube. Not even from the BSWA. You don't learn it from me. You get warmed by me. And little by little, you open up and find out what's inside you. And I don't know why it is. Many times the people say they feel afraid. On one of the talks which I gave last weekend, it was for a beautiful group of Buddhists from Hong Kong, the BIF group, Bodhinyan International Foundation. BIF doesn't mean they're a fight group. And because they can't come over here, we can't go over there, it's nice that we can see each other and talk with each other. And also from the Ahipasako group in Indonesia. So it's wonderful seeing all your old friends again. But anyway, during those question times, because as well as just giving talks, it's great having questions because people can actually ask, you know, what they want to hear. So one of the questions was, they say, when they start getting peaceful in meditation, they get scared. Is this right to get fear when meditation happens? And I recognized that in my own life as a meditator early on. And also the Buddha mentions that as well. That what fear is, you're just going to places you've never been before. And when you go to places you've never been before, of course you're a bit afraid. I don't know, do you remember the first time you came into this hall here? This place? What is this? You know, the people are going to ask me to join the cult. You know, honestly, this is not a cult, you know, many of you just ask each other, you can come and go as you please. But often when you actually become a member of our BSWA, you know, it's just my habit, please excuse me, I say, welcome to the cult. Because I'm not trying to take anything away from you, no one is taking anything away from you. Just like that, I'm going off on tangents, but I love tangents. This woman called me. As I found out afterwards, it was a mother of one of the people who used to come here regularly. And she just asked me on the telephone in those days, said, how much do you have to pay to come here on a Friday night? And I said, it's nothing, it's for free. Then she said, you don't understand. How much money do I have to pay? Say nothing. Listen. How many dollars and cents do I have to give to get through the door? And I told her, madam, as you can all see, you don't have to pay anything to get into this place. I will not take your name or address or try and sell you something. You can come in, you can go out for yourself. And I remember there's this wonderful pause. And I was listening, and she said, "Well, what do you guys get out of this then?" And that was an interesting question, because people always feel you do something to get something back in return. You have to pay, and then you get given something. Or you won't get given something if you don't pay. Or like the other telephone call, when somebody rang and they said, "You know, how much do you charge for meditation instructions?" Said nothing. And they said, "Well, you can't be any good then." And of course, I mean, that's ridiculous. So everything is given for free. So when she said, "What do you get out of this?" You realize when you say, "Oh, there's nothing." If I said that, that wouldn't work. So I wanted to give a deeper answer. I said, "I get happiness." And that's far more correct. You give, what you get out of it is joy and happiness. It's beautiful. So that's one of the reasons why I hope you all understand this is a happy, joyful place. When you go to monasteries, they're happy and joyful places. Sometimes it's even hard to find the donation box. In fact, we try not to call it donation box. Somebody actually wrote on it donation box, but I really wanted it to be called letting go box. It's much easier. Anyway, so back to the Thousand Petal Lotus is as you go deeper in, it gets more profound. And you get these insights which come up. It's insight you see things in a different way. And this is not just seeing things in a different way so you can do experiments and just get Nobel Prizes and increase our technological sort of advantage or invent a new weapon of mass destruction. That's not what I mean by insights or deeper knowledge. It's like insights into how to deal with your life. You know, when things don't go the way you expected them to. And when somebody dies. When you lose your job. Or your investments. The company which you own just goes bankrupt. What do you do? You know that sometimes people are asking me, said, "Well, should we get more insurance in case when things go wrong, or just more safety nets?" And I told them that I don't have insurance for anything. I don't have superannuation. I don't earn anything. I've got no money in the bank, no credit card in my name, nothing. I've got no assets. Oh, that's not true, is it? I do have many assets. I have my townhouse here. I have my country retreat. I got quite a few country retreats now. You know, no, they're not mine. But my insurance policy, and I've told people this, and I think it makes a point. My insurance policy is you. All those friends, including the monks next to me, and all those monks and nuns in the world, which I've helped and served, and are my friends. They're the ones I know who will look after me if ever I get sick, if ever I'm in need of something. You. And it's actually quite fun looking after a monk. In the sense that, I already mentioned to you that sometimes I get a cough. You know, it's just an allergy. It's what I picked up from my father. He had terrible asthma. And eventually died when I was only 16. But, you know, that I've got some of those genes, which means, you know, during the hay fever season, you know, I can have coughing fits. But I always remember when I really have a coughing fit. If you ever had the coughing fits, I always remember that what sort of somebody told me, it's not the cough that carries you off, it's a coughing that carries you off in.
which is one way of looking at something positive. But anyway, just so this one day, here, sitting here, I was coughing, and, you know, I think I only coughed once. You know what happened? I saw a couple of people walk out, and I thought, oh, they didn't like the talk. Actually, they liked the talk, but that's not where they were up to. They just went to the corner of Morley Drive and Wanneroo Road, where there was a chemist. And they came back here, and after the talk, there's about four or five of them. They said, I saw you coughing, I've got some medicine for you. It's very good medicine, you know, it's cured my cough, please take it. And being a fool, idiot, I said, yes, I'll take it. I shouldn't have said that, because somebody else heard it, and they gave me some other medicine. This is homeopathic medicine, very good for you. You'll take it. And I couldn't say no, because I told the other lady I'd take hers. I'll take it. And you wouldn't believe how many different types of medicine there are for a different type of cough. Ayurvedic medicine, naturopathic medicine, homeopathic medicine, I mentioned that, allopathic medicine, psychopathic medicine. I made that one up. But anyway, I had all these medicines in front of me. And I said to them, yes, okay, I'll take it. So I had to. I keep promises. If I say something, you've got to do it. And now I was really sick. Taking all of that. It's fun, because, you know, we always say thank you and kind. So anyway, so back to the Thousand Petal Lotus. So the sun and the moon opening up the lotus, this is an important part of this simile. Because that is the sun and the warmth and light of the sun, so not the moon, that's got nothing to do with it. The warmth and light of the sun stands for mindfulness, that's the light of the sun, and kindness. You do need both of them to open up a lotus, as you need both mindfulness and kindness to open you up. And of course, many people meditating, many people have been to other centers, other traditions in our world. That is the one thing which some mindfulness centers miss out on. Just this beautiful kindness, the warmth. Those two are necessary to open up a lotus. And as you have this warmth and the kindness, that's what you did at the beginning of this meditation. Now, half an hour ago, 1 hour ago, I asked you to look at your body, be aware of it, but be kind to it. So you're looking at your body, and if you need to adjust it, adjust it. If you need to lean against the wall or get a nice chair or something, please do so. And we do that, and we find our body relaxes. It doesn't relax. If you force it to sit still, you too. Who's the next? You, Nicholas, you're moving your hands. Can you really feel that you can get still that way? Or are you just paranoid and scared that someone's going to embarrass you again? No, to be able to sit still, we've got to be able to let go. Here we go. This is one of my favorite similes. And I usually gives this in meditation retreats. This water. My goal is to keep this water perfectly still. So I'm going to... Have I achieved my goal yet? Is it moving? Still moving, isn't it? Why? I'm not being mindful, am I? Now I'm mindful. Has it stopped moving yet? Because I'm not concentrating. So I'm now going to be mindful and concentrate. You make me laugh. Okay, I'm not going to laugh. I'm mindful and concentrate. You know, when I really try, this is honest. When I really try, it moves more. You ever notice that? Why?
Because when we're trying, we actually interfere with things. And that's why things never go well when we try too hard. So, this is where many people try and meditate. And many people, unfortunately, think, I can't meditate, and they leave, they do something else. But with this simile, there's a very simple but very powerfully profound solution. So how can I get this water to be perfectly still? You put it down. You let it go. Now that is incredibly still. Nowhere in the world could I hold it that still. For those of you too far at the back can't see this, you can try it at home. And when you see things like that, you think, oh, stupid, I've been trying to hold my glass of water still for 40 years and it doesn't work. And then somebody says, just put it down, let it go. That is the awareness and kindness we're talking about, the kindness especially, the compassion, the softness. And it becomes natural and easy. If meditation wasn't easy, I'd have given up a long time ago. Imagine, this is only 47 years as a monk, I was meditating 5 years before that. 52 years of meditation and I still got to meditate. Oh, can't I just have a break? This is the break. This is the easy way. The way of, look, you've all seen me so many times, both here and monastery and just chatting about, do I really look stressed out? You're relaxed and easy. Look, see, my robe falls off. That's so nice and easy. So what we mean here is this is actually how the lotus becomes still all by itself and how it opens up. And so what happens is that lotus leaves you just kind and aware, which means the kindness means the awareness can stay with what's happening. I don't know if you've had, you know, children, grandchildren with you. And if you have children or grandchildren, notice, you know, you love them to bits. They tire you out, but you're always happy to see them. And you don't want to wander off somewhere. Why is it that people want to wander off when they're meditating? That was a big thing with me for many, many years. Why? It was not trying to use force. I realized the only reason my mind would wander off when I was meditating, because I wasn't happy to be here. I wanted to go somewhere else, anywhere else. So when you, whatever you're aware of, when you're meditating, you ask yourself, am I happy to be here? I don't want to be somewhere else. And if the answer is the latter, you want to be somewhere else, of course you'll wander off. If you're really happy to be here, you can meditate for hours, literally. Does that mean I have to determine? I'm going to meditate for 4 hours. Then I can maybe get some rope and tie my legs up. That's not how you meditate for hours. You know, sometimes you just sit here, nice and peacefully, calm, enjoying yourself. And after a while, my goodness, clock's wrong. Clock's not wrong. You're enjoying yourself immensely, you haven't fallen asleep. You just blissed out. What was that story? Okay, some meditation stories on this. The monk in Sydney, he's a Vietnamese monk. We try and keep many of these stories reasonably quiet, but because if it was happened sort of the last week or something and I mentioned this and people trust me that what I say is true, that people would go and try and find out who that monk was. And they'd take him, they'd probably force him to go into some laboratory somewhere so they can put ECGs and EEGs on him when he was doing crazy stuff. And that, you know, that's not what we meditate for. But anyway, that he started this 9-day meditation retreat over in Sydney, the Vietnamese Theravada monk. And he started like our retreats, we're having a retreat next weekend.
not next week, in 9 days, starting on the day before Good Friday. I promise I won't do this when I'm there. Otherwise, what he did the first evening, supposed to have like a talk, no, meditation, then a talk, and then everyone just relax, and then talks and meditation throughout the week. So the first meditation, half an hour, and after half an hour meditation, he was still sitting there. He didn't ring the gong. 45 minutes, still sitting there. An hour, still sitting there. 2 hours, still sitting there, hadn't moved. You know what all the people did? They went to bed. They're not going to wait for him. And after 2 hours, after when they got up in the morning, he hadn't moved. Still sitting there. Breakfast, he didn't have any breakfast. He was still sitting there. The morning talk after breakfast, still sitting there. He just remained in one position, not moving at all, for 8 of those 9 days. Didn't go to the toilet. Didn't drink any water. Didn't eat anything. Perfectly still. And that's true. And after when he came out of his meditation, he apologized. He said, I'm terribly sorry. Because I got into really, really deep meditation. And, you know, I didn't give you any talks. It was such a rare thing to see. A lot of people that said, no, you didn't need to give a talk. It was just so inspiring just to see that people can still do this these days. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, by the way, means awesome. So it was inspiring. But how does that happen? It hasn't moved since I put it down. No effort. You get into such joy and peace. You don't want to move. Sometimes you can't move. Having the time of your life. But sometimes people feel scared. I can't understand why people feel scared when these states start to arrive and you start to grow into them. What are you scared about? This you're having the time of your life. Wonderful, it's beautiful, it's great. If anyone else is worried about that because you can't go to work, who cares about work? Wouldn't you like to have these deep meditations rather than going to work? You can figure it out afterwards. But anyway, just... when the mindfulness and the kindness get so beautiful, you're staying there. And it's some meditation practices, they don't do enough of the kindness. And their speech can be a bit sort of harsh to their family members and to themselves and to others, but especially to themselves. The kindness, the softness, the gentleness, which is required for deep meditation, you haven't practiced it. Haven't practiced like being like a lotus. People call you an idiot. They call you just the greatest monk ever lived. And sometimes people believe that. So instead, you just let that all go. You're a lotus. It all falls off you. Which means you have the kindness and the peace for yourself. Which means that when you meditate, whatever happens in the meditation, you don't praise it. You don't get excited that great things are happening. You don't get afraid. What's going to happen to me? This is one of the reasons why meditating teachers, monks and nuns, why we have to always guarantee for you. The only thing you're possible to lose through deep meditation is your hair. In other words, you like being monks or nuns. Why not? Wonderful lifestyle. Anyway, so back to the thousand petal lotus. As you go deeper and deeper in, it's the mindfulness and the kindness which open you up. So you start with your body. And the body gets so relaxed, it doesn't make any business. So it disappears from your radar screen, if you like. And then what comes next? Now you go into your mind, and the next thing which comes up is time. Because in our mind, this is not our body, our mind is obsessed with this thing which is called time, the past and the future. And we just spend so much of our life in those two extremes, the past and the future. And then we go inside of that layer of petals,
called past and future, opens up. We're in this present moment. And the best way to get into that present moment is just awareness and kindness. You're kind enough to the past to forgive it. You're kind enough to the future to, where is it? Present tomorrow, don't worry, be happy. I said, no, that's just causing too much force on you to try to be happy. Don't worry, be hopey. I made that adjustment, something. No, hope for the best, be positive for the future. It's more chance it will happen. But anyway, so then you go into this present moment. And then after a while with mindfulness and kindness, the present moment petals open up. And inside of that is silence. The mind is not thinking. It doesn't need to think. Perfectly aware. But not giving names or concepts or conversations to itself. You know. Just like that. Silence. And silence, I guess I've had so many wonderful, beautiful experiences in silence. Both, you know, with my eyes open and often with my eyes closed in meditation. The most beautiful sound in the world is silence. No business. And then, weird, but it happens, the next thing which usually happens is that lotus petal of silence opens up. And then you're with your breathing, your breath. The reason is because that's still moving, you're still breathing. But it's so quiet and calm, it's gorgeous. As you go deeper into the lotus, those petals are more beautiful. And then the breath starts to open up. The breath, not just an in-breath and out-breath, but just breath. No difference, you're right in this moment. You don't know whether it's an in-breath or an out-breath, it's just breath. That's an important part of the meditation. For those of you who doubt me, that's, you know, with Suddhimagga, that's where Acharya Buddhaghosa starts saying it's like a saw cutting wood, up and down, like in and out breath. But after a while you focus, all you see is just one or two teeth of the saw, and that tiny bit of wood which is being cut. You don't see the beginning and the end of the saw. No more you see the beginning and the end of a breath. This is a little part of breath happening now. That's how focus should become. Naturally, you don't do this by willpower. You do it with kindness and awareness. It's such a beautiful thing to understand, which means that you don't have to think, oh, I can't do this. This is way above me, my pay grade. But no, this is just what happens. As you're kind and aware, it just opens up and this is there. You don't disturb anything. And then, because that breath isn't doing very much, then the breath vanishes. And what happens next? The next layers of petals are beautiful. These are what we call the nimittas. These beautiful lights which appear in the mind. All sorts of amazing colours. And more simple the better. So you get maybe, just complicated nimittas. They're still gorgeous. If you're not, experience quite a large amount of bliss, it's not the real nimittas. If you come out even just after nimittas, or you're like walking on air. Nimittas is just a pali name for these things. Gorgeous lights in the mind. And they're really sometimes quite strange. One of the nice things about the nimittas is, which really sets them apart, is whatever colour they are, there's not the sort of intensity which you can see in the external world. You're not seeing them through your eyes. This is a mental image. It's where the five senses have started to decrease in power. And the sixth sense, your mind, a totally separate sense base, is becoming powerful. And so the colours you see, It's just like I'm just seeing the blue in your blanket over there. It's like more blue than that blue. More blue than any blue you've ever seen in the world. Yellows, which are just so gorgeously yellow. You can't see a yellow like that in any painting or any sort of color charts in the hardware store. Unworldly colors and very powerful, very blissful. When people get afraid, one of the reasons you get afraid is because, you know, you haven't been there before. And it's also, you realize it's powerful, more powerful than you. So you have to let go of your sense of control and self. You're totally safe. So just let it happen. It's wonderful, it's good. And there's never any negative consequences to this, but beautiful consequences. So you get nimittas. Those nimittas get very still. You go into the lotus. What do? Mindfulness and kindness, that's all. It's beautiful kindness, looking on your body and mind with beautiful, soft, gentle, peaceful, accepting eyes. And just being there. You don't need any effort because it's just too gorgeous. And then they go into those nimittas. And that's where you go into some of these really deep petals inside your lotus. And that's what we call the jhanas. I don't usually mention that word here. And sometimes I mention that so often in the monastery that when I do a talk to the monks, when I don't mention the jhanas, I never mention the jhanas. I did that last week, I think. And then the monks say, you just mentioned them by saying you didn't. Anyway. So these are powerful states of mind, brilliant, beautiful states of mind. And to be quite honest with you, I'm sure that Ajahn Bhamani will come up with this when he gets into this in his Eightfold Path. When the Buddha said, what type of meditation did the Buddha praise? What type of meditation did the Buddha do? This is in the Gopika Moggallana Sutta. He said, only four, said Ananda. The Buddha only did and praised, or praised, four types of meditation. First jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. And then one of the other suttas, Pasadika Sutta, I'll finish soon, saying that the Buddha was telling another monk, look, if some of the other people, they say, oh, you monks, you're just into pleasure. Because the monks and the nuns at that time were happy. They were joyful, they were smiling a lot. So you must, you know, where do you get your pleasure from, monks? They said, no, not from the world. But do you enjoy things? He said, some things. What do you enjoy? And he says, we don't enjoy the pleasures of the five senses, but the pleasures of the mind, the deep meditations. We really indulge in that. We get off on it. And if the people accuse you of that, you say, yeah, that's true, said the Buddha. So what happens? What happens to you if you go so deep into your lotus, you start to experience these deep, powerful meditations? Joyful, blissful, deep, the jhanas. What happens to you? And the Buddha said, well, only four things can happen. Either stream-winning, once-returning, non-returning, or full enlightenment. Four stages of enlightenment. That's what the Buddha said, verbatim. So if you want to be enlightened, enjoy it, go for it, see what happens. Bliss out. When I actually discovered that, I said, wow, what a wonderful way of spiritual development. Bliss upon bliss upon bliss. Oh, thank you for listening.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I'm sure I must get some questions after that talk.
Any questions from the floor? Yeah, where? Somewhere.
Hock Chin.
Oh, Hock Chin, yeah.
Very good.
Oh, can you get? Hey. Okay. What's your question? I'll repeat it.
Just a comment.
A comment, yeah? Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
is to be mentally prepared for this job.
Yeah.
Don't worry, be happy, whatever happens.
Who knows what might happen? Very good. Oh, thank you, Hokchin. If it was perceived as blame, remember, it's just like you, Orion, be the lotus that it fall off you. Anyway, from Switzerland, something, beginner's question, USA, Germany, Singapore, Ireland, my goodness. I'm going to start for the last one first. From Ireland. My dearest Ajahn Brahm, how can you tell when you have actually meditated and not simply wasted an hour? That's an easy one. You never waste time when you're meditating. It's a piece of advice my first meditation teacher taught me when I was still a layperson. He said, there is no such thing as a bad meditation. I said, you don't know how I meditate, do you? Especially when you're a layperson. And he said, no, there's no such thing as a bad meditation. Little by little, even just sitting down and even fantasizing or thinking all sorts of stupid thoughts, you're getting to know your mind. You're getting to be with it. And little by little, slow or fast, you realize that the best thing to fantasize about is nothing at all. And the silence of the mind beats everything. I told someone today, so why did you become a monk? Pretty obvious, meditation. So you never waste an hour, or 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, or whatever. There's no such thing as a bad meditation. And the other little thing about that question, first year I started meditating, I did a lot. This was when I was a student. Second year, well, you know, there's many other things you've got to do as a student. Playing around. But I didn't do so much. Remember, I cannot recall exactly where this was, but I know I was having a cup of coffee somewhere and in front of a German fellow, and he said, oh, he meditated as well. I said, I used to meditate quite a bit, but not so much these days. He said, why not? I said, well, the meditation's not really working. I said that, I remember. And then what really hit me and changed my course back onto real big meditation, he said, well, you know, at the end of every meditation, if you ask yourself, instead of just getting up, it's not working today, ask yourself, do I feel better now than when I first started? And I said, hey, I never did that before. And I often do that. Even when I do the guided meditations, I ask you, how do you feel right now? What does peace feel like? How's your body feel relaxed? And you'll find even what you thought were bad meditation were actually pretty positive. And that just got me going again into my meditation practice. And of course, it really takes off now. From Singapore. During meditation, often negative emotion of memories that I try to forget surface again. And it's very uncomfortable. What should I do? What's the answer? Mindfulness and kindness. Be kind to those negative emotions of your past. That's the best way to let go of your past, by softening it with kindness, first of all. Especially the negative emotions, something which happened to you. You think, ah, did I really deserve that? Probably not. Should I get angry at the person who did that to me? Ah, probably not. That poor person, I'm not sure why they did that. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they, like I think I said last week or 2 weeks ago, I said it somewhere, about the person sent to get eggs from the market. Hitting themselves on, no, this kid was abusing them when they went to the market. Was it here 2 weeks ago? Yay, good memory. And this husband was abused by a person in the marketplace in public, never met him before in his life, and was eventually told by his wife that he does that to everybody because when he was young, a boy, he fell over and hit his head, his brain damaged. That's why he curses and swears at people. And the meaning of that story is, if someone swore at you this last week or cursed you, they must be brain damaged. Tell that to your boss. And there's truth to that. No one in their right mind would curse or swear or tell another person that, you know, you're lazy, you're hopeless, you're a slob or whatever. Who would ever do that to anybody, even if they don't know them? It doesn't make any sense to me, honestly. So anyway, so negative emotions and memories come up. Don't try to forget them. Just be kind to them. And be aware they're coming up, be kind to them, and they lose their power. When you try to get rid of them, negative to them, you give them power. From Germany, Ajahn, are we all one being, or how can our thoughts and feelings have an impact on others far away? You once say we are none. What do you mean by that? Thank you. That was referring to the bhikkhunis. They're nuns. No, that's not what I meant. But no, people have wonderful ideas that we're all connected. But, you know, I turn my internet off very often. I like to be disconnected and then connect up again. So tonight I'm connecting with you, I hope. But once you go home and I go into my room, I'm disconnecting so I can be peaceful and still. And when you actually learn how to disconnect, not always connect with others, you realize that most of your life you're with yourself. Much more than you're with anybody else. And the last person you see before you go to sleep at night is you. You may have a partner laying next to you. You may have their arms wrapped around you. But nevertheless, before you go to sleep, you're the last person you're aware of. And so much of your life is with you. And that's one of the reasons why one of the best persons in this world to love is yourself. If you know how to do that, it's very easy to love others. So anyway, that is the best person to love. You're not always connected. You're not always one being. Are you connected with everyone in this universe? With Donald Trump? With... Why did you laugh? Poor Donald Trump. So you have the choice to connect, but you can relax and disconnect, and even disconnect from yourself as well. Let's go in the deep meditations. From the USA, if everyone is equal in Buddhism, why do you call female monks bhikkhuni or nuns? Why not refer to them as monks as well? Why don't you set the example, Ajahn Brahm? Yes. Why do they call themselves nuns? They should call themselves monks. But sometimes we need to have skillful means so we know which toilet to go in. Or do we want it so that we don't have any sort of gender discrimination in the toilets? Shall we do that? Just talk with the next president next year. We want to renovate the toilets, don't we, Dennis? Okay, there we go. No. Is everyone equal? You know, that's one of the things with the US Constitution. The first verse, you think, well, this is obviously wrong. Now, all beings are created equal. First of all, created equal. Beings are not created equal. The obvious thing is, but they should be given equal respect, equal opportunities, yes. And we call it equity. If a person needs something, they should not be discriminated on because of their gender, because of their race, because of their age, because of their thinness or fatness, because of their religion, or whatever, their race especially. I can't understand race. You know, did you know that I'm in my DNA, I'm mostly Asian? Honestly, I don't lie, I'm Asian. Caucasian. Okay, so is Donald Trump, he's Asian as well. Caucasian. Set the example, Ajahn Brahm. Of course I set examples. Even Donald Trump sets examples.
bad examples. Good examples. I tried my best. A last question. Why is it not enough to simply apply the teachings to daily life? Thank you. I hope this question isn't too silly. Can you apply the teachings to daily life? Sometimes daily life applies its own teachings to you. And sometimes you're not in control. So that's one of the reasons we think that we can do things. We apply things. And a lot of times, the more you try and control life by applying this and applying that, sometimes it doesn't work. Okay, the last simile, I haven't told this for a long time, but I'm in the mood, is the simile of the driverless bus. Did I say that in the last few weeks? No. Because I remember this was many years ago. I think I remember this time. This was about 30 years ago, I think. Yeah, about 30 years ago. Before we had this hall, it was in the other hall. I was told this story of the driverless bus. This is life. So sometimes it's like you're in a... This is way before Google had the idea. I should have... what was it called? I got the copyright for the idea. Yeah, anyway. So life is like you're in a bus, like the journey. And sometimes you go through some beautiful territory, waterfalls and gardens and sun. It's just so amazingly beautiful, your life. And you tell your bus driver, slow down, park, stop. I want to enjoy this beautiful scenery. What does your bus driver do? Speeds up. So all your happy times, they don't last as long as they should. And then sometimes you're going through the toxic waste dumps of life. And it's terrible scene. You look out the window, oh, this is disgusting. Get out of here as fast as you can, you tell your bus driver. And what does your bus driver do? Slows down and parks. Why is it when you have terrible situations in life, you lose someone dear to you? Or you have bad sicknesses like cancers. You lose your job or something. Or other people in your family, they die and they fall apart. Why do those times last too long? And the good times are just too short. So you decide, what's the fault? The fault is with that stupid bus driver I've got. What is that bus driver? That's, your will, your choice. So you want to teach your bus driver how to drive a bus. So you come to a place like this to learn all the skillful means how to drive your bus through the difficulties of life and get out of the toxic waste dumps and just stop the beautiful scenic sceneries of life. You want wisdom, kindness, whatever. And so you think, I'm going to go and teach my bus driver how to drive. But you've got to find where that bus driver is, first of all. Who chooses, who's in control of what you do? Do you reckon? So that's what meditation does. You find your bus driver's seat deep in that lotus. And there you get one of the biggest shocks of your life. Your bus driver's seat is empty. There's no one there. Anatta, non-self. You understand where all those choices come from. Conditioning. When you realize your bus driver's seat is empty, just go back to your seat. You shut up. There's no one to shout to. Difficult times of life, make peace. Beautiful times of life, make peace. No problem anymore. Nothing to do. The driverless bus, which is you. Do you agree with that? Of course you can't. The reason why is because you haven't found that driver's seat yet. So be prepared. It's a shock, but that's what happens.
Yay, peace at last. Okay, enough, I'll get into more trouble. So anyway, there we go for tonight. So what are we doing now? Oh, yes, right, we'll do the bowing three times. Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangang Namami.